Welcome once again to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson. Joining me today are Nick English. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm not bad. And of course, Mr. Squawker Dave, Dave O'Brien as well. How are you doing, Dave?
Yeah,
I can't even see you there. How are you doing?
I'm hiding, mate.
You're hiding.
Ready. Stats in my back pocket.
I can't wait. We start with the Premier League fixtures. It's just been announced. Come to you first, Nick. What's the fixture you're looking out for most?
Well, it's got to be United City derby, 10th of September, four game weeks in, Guardiola versus Mourinho. You know, an early... They'll have had their settled teams, transfer windows finished. They've got their starting 11s down, probably. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens there. Also, I'm looking forward to Wenger hosting Klopp. Opening game of the season at the Emirates, Arsenal versus Liverpool. You know, Liverpool are desperate to break into that Champions League elite, which Arsenal dominate so easily year after year. So it'll be a good marker for either team to put down. Those are the two I'm looking forward to.
Box office managers. What do you reckon, Dave? Who are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I think it's the Manchester derby, isn't it? Man United picking up 12 points in the first four games. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Or is it going to be that certain?
Yeah, simple, isn't it, really? Mourinho versus Pep, easy. It's an easy win.
Do you not see any trip hazards on the way there?
Now, Bournemouth away, first game of the season, could be a little bit tricky because United obviously lost the fixture last season. Marouane Fellaini missed a sitter from about 3 yards. But whether Mourinho uses him in the opening game, we yet to see. I don't think so. I hope not, but anyone knows with Marouane Fellaini.
Mourinho's never really faced a manager like Conte before. He's never really faced someone
like his
who's,
mirror.
Yeah, he's never faced like a tactical maniac to Conte's degree. He's obviously faced Guardiola, but Guardiola's a little different. Someone like of Conte's tactical and defensive pedigree could pose an interesting challenge for him.
Kind of brings us to the question of who do you think has got the toughest start, either at the top or the bottom? Anyway, anyone got any big thoughts on this? Any teams that are
it's jumping
out?
Watford, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Watford, have you seen that? I mean, they've got Southampton away, Chelsea at home, Arsenal at home, West Ham away, Manchester United at home, like their first six games. I mean, it's just absurd. Like
new manager as well.
New manager, like, I mean, the one thing working in their favour is that they've not had many players away on international duty at Copa America or the Euros, and they'll have a full pre-season with Mazzarri, and they'll probably add a couple of quality additions to that team, but that's a brutal opening, especially with so many teams that are keen to prove a point, like Chelsea, Arsenal and Man United.
I think that's where Mazzarri will catch him out. He was very good at Napoli. He was very good at playing on the counter-attack, played the 3-4-3 with Higuain, Amzic and Lavezzi up top. So if you can play that a similar style like that on the counter-attack, it could do him quite well. There could be some upsets in there.
Yeah, no, the pressure's off. Nobody's expecting anything from those first six games for Watford, probably. You know, they probably hope to pick up more points later on in the season. But, yeah, so the pressure's off. But at the same time, they're facing quality opposition.
100%. One question a lot of people have discussed, especially on Twitter, does the fixture list actually matter?
Yeah, it matters. I think it matters when you look at how teams work and especially managers work in terms of momentum. For example, Jurgen Klopp sides, you know, you fancy him if they get a run of, you know, five or six home fixtures, because I know they're trying to switch loads of their fixtures to home and away at the moment. If they get five or six home fixtures round about the turn of the year, that could work really well for them. Same thing for Arsenal. If they have loads of away games in February, March, which I think they actually do, you know, you can see that collapse happening again, the sort of the mentality coming into play. So it really depends. It depends on the manager.
Do you think Mourinho's going to be happy with the hand he's been dealt for the first five or six fixtures, Dave?
Yeah, I think it's a good hand, isn't it? It's quite a relatively easy start, so it's good to get off the last eight all right as well. So it's a mid-season where United will be tested, you know, around that December time, February, January. So, yeah, it's a good start, very good start and good end. So you can't really ask for much more than that. I think it does. It's a big impact. Liverpool have got a lot of big games at that start, and if they don't win, the pressure's going to be on Jurgen Klopp. So, yeah, it could be a difficult start for Liverpool as well, I imagine.
You said you couldn't ask for more. Well, we've got more. The Euros are obviously taking place.
Hello.
Enough of this Premier League fixture talk. There's a tournament happening,
yeah,
guys.
Sorry, Greg. I got a bit bored, mate.
Didn't we all? Don't. Keep listening. Please do keep listening. But the big game this week is obviously England versus Wales, because we are hopelessly parochial and British in this podcast. How do you think it's going to go? Wales are obviously the team on top of the group at the moment after winning their first fixture. England could only get a draw against Russia. Nick, do you think that Wales are now the team in control of Group B?
Well, yeah, they are, because, I mean, essentially 3 or 4 points practically guarantees you qualification in this form of the Euros. And you can already see that loads of teams are changing how they're going to approach their second games just because they got a win in the first game. You know, a draw was a terrible result for England, because if they've got a win, then Hodgson can try out some different stuff in the group, you know, maybe experiment more with his lineup, like it looks like France are going to do tonight. But, I mean, Wales are in control of the group, but, you know, at the same time, they were a bit fortunate to beat Slovakia. You know, they would have needed that to win it. And also, you know, England are just a win away. If they beat Wales, then they're firmly back in control of the group. Because Russia-Slovakia, if it doesn't end in a mass brawl, will probably end in a draw. So, you know, it's just a win away. All Hodgson has to do is get his team to perform as well as they can, and they should win the game.
Mm-hmm. One person I've actually spoken to recently about Gareth Bale is ex-England international Chris Waddle, who gave us some nice thoughts on Gareth Bale and why he actually thinks he's not a top-level player at the moment.
I think he's up there with the British, definitely, yeah. Well, I wouldn't say world players. I think he's still. I still think he's got obviously bits to go. I've watched him a few times, and he can be very quiet in the games. I know he can just produce something, but sometimes I don't think he. What could you say? He doesn't sort of control a football match and have a run of the game like he runs the game like Messi does or Neymar does or Suarez does. They're sort of controlling the game, and I don't think he's got that impact at the minute. I think he's one of them players built around the top players like Ronaldo and people like that, and he fits into a system at the minute, and he does that bit of brilliance, or he can do that stuff which he can make something happen, but overall in games he doesn't sort of dominate the football match yet, and I think that may come. But when you're watching people like Barcelona, Real Madrid, and players of that type of stature, you always think they're in control of the game. The ball seems to be at them all the time. They're making the decisions. They're controlling the pace of the game. They're dictating what's happening, sort of thing. He's a fantastic footballer, and he's got so much going for him football-wise. But I think maybe whether it's a little bit of belief or confidence or cockiness or arrogance, he doesn't seem to have that. And all these players seem to have that sort of presence on the field, or you can't take your eyes off them. Yeah, and I don't think he's got to that stature yet.
Well, I mean, from England's perspective, hopefully he doesn't find it in the group stages.
A player with that ability, you can keep him quiet, it might be 89 minutes, but he will produce something. I'll be very surprised if he doesn't do something in that game against England where people go, should have scored, could have scored, or what a ball, what a goal. There will be incidents, and it's up to England to stop your service, and then obviously when he gets it, it's up to England to get players around him very quickly, not just one, maybe two, and hustle him and be a bit physical, strong with him, not kicking him, but physical, strong, and make him pass it back and make him pass it square. And if he does that, he's not obviously got the impact then you have on the game.
That was Chris Waddle, ex-England winger, talking about Gareth Bale, and whether he stands up to the likes of Neymar, Messi, Ronaldo, speaking to us on behalf of Betway there. Dave, I know you've got some strong thoughts on Gareth Bale. What do you think of the idea that he's not quite arrogant enough to be a kind of Ronaldo or a Messi?
Not arrogant enough. Why do players need arrogance? If Gareth Bale's doing it, if he's scoring goals, he's getting assists, he's carrying teams, you don't need arrogance about you. He doesn't have an arrogance about him with the Wales camp. That's why the Wales camp... why Wales are going to beat England, because they don't have an arrogance. They have a team. They have a team of players. You look at the formation they play, that's completely going to count with the England formation. The narrow arrow, as Roy calls it, or the diamond. If you play in a 4-2-1, that's the ultimate counter. Why do teams in Italy play a 3-5-2 or that system? Because it counts as a narrow diamond, and that's what was played in Italy for years and years and years. So it just seems like it's the perfect mismatch. You've got Aaron Ramsey and Gareth Bale up against Eric Dier in that defensive midfield zone. Do you not see a bit of a danger there? Russia broke on England a few times. Centrally, there was two centre-backs in the defensive midfielder. The two full-backs obviously attacked for England. So much space for Gareth Bale, so much space for Ramsey, so much space for whether it's going to be Johnny Williams or Robson Carnoux. Whichever in there, that's a real recipe for disaster.
Speaking of arrogance and Bale, he actually said this week that no England players would get into the Wales side. Nick, what do you think of that?
I think it's one of those press conference things where his quotes get taken out of context. Where Chris Coleman set up this Wales side very specifically with the system in mind, which works around Bale and Ramsey. You look at the England team, there's not many players that fit into that system that well. Maybe Raheem Sterling, maybe Daniel Sturridge would work in that. But they're a very well-balanced team. They do what they do very, very well. They have got a solid spine. Joe Ledley coming back in, makes them a very interesting proposition in terms of breaking up our midfield attacks. You can, as much as Eric Dier is going to stick on Bale, you can bet that if Joe Ledley's playing, he's going to stick to Adam Lallana and just stop him Cruyffing his way through the world, a Cruyff tornado. But essentially, it boils down to two very simple things. Is England, from open play, are a far superior team. They're better at holding the ball. I mean, against Russia, they created 11 chances, completed 23 take-ons. They regained the ball in the opposition half 10 times. But the game's not only played in open play, especially this tournament. They're set pieces. From set pieces, England look absolutely terrified. Yeah. Like Sergei Ignashevich and the Berezutsky
boys.
The boys. There's only one of them playing. They really... caused us issues at set pieces, and Smalling and Cahill need to absolutely take charge of that, because players like Ashley Williams, players like Joe Ledley, players like Bale's a fantastic header of the ball. He really had, you know, has molded himself into Ronaldo in that respect. You know, they're a real threat from set pieces, and also there's the direct free kick. So, you know, they have to be a bit more diligent, a bit more, you know, respectful of the threat from set pieces, but also just convert the chances.
I think another mismatch in open play is if one of the wing-backs gets forward and then Gareth Bale pulls onto the back post, because Kyle Walker and Danny Rose are quite frankly not good enough in the air. In a way, England should start maybe even look at John Stones playing right-back or John Stones playing left-back, wherever you want to play him. Just bring another centre-back into the squad to deal with these set-piece issues. Because if you think of the England team, there's probably three of them. You'd say maybe four of them with Harry Kane that I've actually got Harry, you know, Eric Dier, Cahill and Smalling, and the rest are quite short, quite poor in the air. So yeah, it's going to be a massive mismatch, and we've seen a lot of goals that have come from set pieces, like Nick mentioned. You know, Switzerland scored their goal from it. So I think it's going to be a tournament for England that they need to be a bit smarter. They're not playing smart football at the moment. They're not getting wide enough when they're attacking. They're too narrow. So I think it's England have got to change a number of things, and whether it's going to be pushed by the players, like at Manchester United apparently this season, where they all, you know, decided to play their own way. That may need to happen with England.
Do you think is that drastic?
It just doesn't work. It doesn't work for me at the moment. Their system doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
There's nothing to say about it. You saw how Portugal played a narrow diamond yesterday so well with two wide forwards playing in the striker positions. That's what you do if you play a narrow diamond, because you need width higher up the pitch. And England they're not selecting the right players again. You know, Jamie Vardy, not played a minute yet.
Yeah.
Crazy. Premier League, you know, how well did he do in the Premier League?
Harry Kane doesn't look match fit.
No, he doesn't.
Fundamentally, he doesn't look match fit. He scored 24 of his 25 Premier League goals last season inside the area, right? He didn't have a shot inside the area against Russia. And how many balls were put into that crucial sort of corridor of uncertainty, inverted commas? Where was, like, he's not match fit. And it's not his fault. He played his heart out for Pochettino all season. Jamie Vardy or Daniel Sturridge should be an automatic starter against Wales, because we need someone in that penalty area who's going to put the ball in the back of the net. And Harry Kane doesn't look like he's even remotely got the energy to do that at the moment.
You know, it looks like Marcus Rashford probably would be the best option, because
maybe.
He's youthful and he doesn't, you know, he's at Man United, he showed that he doesn't play, he's in a system, but he plays outside that system. And again, that's what England need, players to have a bit more freedom. And again, that might be how England need to break teams down, is play someone like Marcus Rashford, who's going to do something different in the final third. Or like Sturridge or Vardy. They need pace. That's what they need. England are really struggling. Like, Harry Kane is just not, whatever, he's fit or whatever, he's just not showing that same determination. He's not running the channels as well as he does usually. So there's a lot of things that need to change for this England side, or they're going to be dumped out, which would be really embarrassing in this group.
But if we're not that impressed with England, who are the teams we've been enjoying the most at the Euro so far? Obviously, everybody's played at least one game now. Nick, I'm going to come to you first. What's the team that's impressed you the most so far?
Croatia. I thought Croatia were fantastic against Turkey. It's been a tournament of really physical displays, really organised displays. Like Czech Republic made Spain like suffer and sweat for their win. Hungary turned over much fancied Austria. See what that David Alaba looks like. He's perfect to play left back, by the way.
Nick, that's absolutely rubbish, mate.
No, I think Croatia were fantastic. You know, they created, Modric and Rakitic created six chances between them against Turkey, which is a lot of chances, and they just keep the play moving and moving and moving. Mandzukic is your classic international striker, sort of, you know, just a pain to play against. He's really physical presence. Perisic and Brozovic provide like width and, you know, boundless energy. They look really good, and that Turkey team is not to be laughed at.
Yeah,
like they came to play, and they were, as predicted, enormously physical. But I think Croatia definitely want to watch.
Well, both teams were actually picked by us, Squawker, as the two dark horses to watch. So I guess Croatia
know
that.
I didn't even know that.
Absolutely.
How about that?
Dave, which team are you enjoying the most at the Euros so far?
Team is a difficult one, because there's been teams that have been exciting.
We're going to get a list.
I think Portugal, to be honest, in that first half were very, very good last night. I think they were a bit cocky when they came out. They didn't fancy it in the second half, and they, you know, inevitably didn't pick up the 3 points. But in that first half, they were really good. As I mentioned, the wide forwards played really well. They had a great understanding. One would be wide, one would be central. Worked very well. Nani probably should have scored. They should have gone in 2-0 up. Andre Gomez, was absolutely brilliant. Had an absolute cracking game. Created 5 chances in the game in the Euro so far. Only Marouan Fellaini and Dimitri Payet have created more in a single game. But again, the midfield was fluid. The fullbacks were excellent. The issue is at centre back. You know, if they, it feels like if this, this Portuguese golden generation, in a way, if they had, if these two centre backs were 5 years younger, they'd win the Euros because they have everything else. They've got two good full backs to get forward. Guerrero, that's gone to Dortmund, and Varane at the other side, that's been at Wolfsburg, who's been awesome for about three or four seasons. It's just the centre backs. So maybe they need to bring in Jose Fonte, Premier League player that we know, or maybe drop maybe Danilo to centre back. I think that Carvalho should have probably been in central midfield, playing against a team that sits deep. You want a ball player, not a destroyer. So maybe that's another little tweak. I think there's a few tweaks Portugal could make to really come alive in this tournament, because again, they're a team that doesn't play with a natural number nine. And again, if you look, go through the list of all the other teams, Spain, England, Germany, Poland, the list goes on, they all play with a number nine, whereas Portugal don't. So it's going to be a bit difficult to play against them in the latter stages. The other team, quick one, Poland. Really enjoyed the Polish performance. Majlik was really good. Kaputska was really, really good. Lewandowski played quite well, even though he was a little bit isolated at times. You've got the, that left-hand side that's probably the best, in, the right-hand side, sorry, that's probably the best in the tournament with Kuba and Piszczek. So yeah, I think they're another team that latter stages, they've got a lot of pace on the counter-attack, so we could have some really exciting games with Poland involved.
What impressed me most about Poland is Lewandowski is clearly being marked out of the game, basically. Yet they still had the extra kind of dimension to come in, as you say, with Milik especially. They haven't really had that in previous tournaments. I don't think they won a game in their last two Euro appearances.
Well, this is the, again, they've got a very good side. You know, Krajovac, the Sevilla midfielder, excellent, controlled the game, broke up play, had a really, really good game, and it just, it worked all together. You know, Milik was playing that sort of second strike role. He was running beyond Lewandowski, which worked really well, but he was, what was so good was his timing of his run. He was a little bit like, not Frank Lampard-esque or Gerrard-esque, but the, that type of timing where when he got into the penalty area, it was at the perfect moment. You know, the chance that he had in that first half, watch that cutback, he slows himself down, then gets into the penalty area and should have probably scored that. The goal that he actually scored, again, a really delayed run, let the Northern Irish back five go into the box, held himself up, used two of them as a shield, put the ball in the back of the net. Very, very clever player, and a player that's going to be going to a big club at the end of this tournament.
They've learned to do what Sweden have never learned, is to how to use Ibrahimovic as a decoy. They're using their star man Lewandowski as a decoy, effectively, and they're letting the other players who are actually really decent work off of Lewandowski, because he's taking two men with him from the defence every single time, and against a back five, that's how you break it open, isn't it?
I think two things on Lewandowski. Firstly, yeah, you can create three chances in the game. That's more than any other player, which, for a player that has been man-marked very tightly, incredible. And again, like Nick said, using him as a decoy, go to that chance that Milik should have put away. A third man run with Lewandowski coming deep, taking the ball to feet, giving it back to Blaszczykowski. Nailed it.
Not even close.
That's right, it's Blaszczykowski. Yeah, no, I didn't. It was not even close. Sorry, guys. Yeah, but anyway,
that's the educational element of the Cooper, pod, sorted.
Cooper pinged the ball over the top to a third man run from deep from Piszczek. And that's what Lewandowski can do. He brings so many players with him that it opens up space in behind him that Poland will exploit.
Nice, nice. And I mean, obviously Belgium, we should probably talk about them as well, because they were pretty awful considering the amount of talent on the field. Dave, any thoughts on what's going wrong with Wilmots?
The talent's questionable. I think that's the biggest thing. Some of these players have been overinflated, especially Eden Hazard, who has been made captain for whatever reason. Don't understand that at all. A player that's never shown any captain characteristics in the past before. You got someone like Vertonghen there. Crazy. Absolutely mental. And then players like De Bruyne, who's been pushed out wide, the best attacking midfielder in world football, playing on the right with Marouane Fellaini playing attacking midfield. Are you crazy? And then, you know, the fullbacks that they don't have, Jordan Lukaku has got to start in the next game because he's the only natural player that can give them width. You know, it's classic stuff. They're so broken. They're very much like Austria. Austria are a broken side. Their attackers don't defend and their defenders don't attack. Similar with Belgium, and it's a bit of an issue. And then in midfield, I thought Witzel was pretty decent. Nangeland had a pretty poor game. Fellaini was poor. Even though he created those seven chances, all those chances were outside the area. All they were not, they're all knockdowns. They were in front of an Italian wall, as you know, as was mentioned. So it's not, there's no quality there. And if that's going to be the case for Belgium again, we're going to be disappointed.
But it might make the group a bit more interesting, potentially. But what are the groups we're looking forward to having the biggest kind of dramatic finish in the end of the group stages? Nick, have you got any thoughts for combination of teams you think are really going to explode by the third game?
As I said earlier, like the qualification system makes it so less dramatic. But, you know, but I think that the one group where it's going to go very close is Group D, because you've got Spain, Turkey, Croatia and Czech Republic. Spain, Croatia and Turkey all look dangerous when they played in their first games. They all look like they've got goals in them. You know, but Czech Republic against Spain looked like they looked like really, really organised. I mean, Tomáš Rosický's ran more in that game than he has in the past 7 years at Arsenal. Like,
combined.
Literally. Like, it was amazing. The defensive effort they put in. They're definitely the minnows of that group. But you fancy them to pick up a clean sheet or even a win against someone like Turkey, and then they get 3 points, and then Croatia will all get 3 points. You know, Turkey might spring a surprise against Spain because they play on the counter. So, like, I think that's going to be a group which turns out to be a little bit complicated.
Dave, any thoughts on a group to watch out for?
England's group as well, I think, pre-mentioned. I think there's no one that's really leading that group. France's group could be quite interesting. Romania was surprisingly good.
Yeah, they were excellent.
In their first game, they won more tackles in the opponent's half than any other team in the Euro so far. I went to Albania, Switzerland. Switzerland looked really good, two really good fullbacks. Albania, I just don't think they've got enough, though. So I think with that group, it's going to be interesting to see who becomes the top two, not who goes through.
Are Russia going to be knocked out through the qualifying system or through fan outrage? What are we going with?
If England go out because Russia are disqualified and we still haven't got enough points to make it through the third, one of the four third places, I mean, Roy Hodgson should not only be sacked but thrown into the River Thames with a small dinghy and just allowed to float until we can't see him anymore.
Nick's going for Hodgsick.
Yeah, Hodgsick, exactly. Yeah.
A quick word, we should probably talk about the host, France. Done a fantastic job on the football so far. Maybe not on the stuff going outside the stadiums with all the everywhere, but in terms of the football, Nick, how are you feeling as a proud Frenchman?
As a proud Frenchman, people think you're joking now.
No, he's called English, but he is French.
No, very good. The first game was perfect for France. Actually, they faced a team that they thought were going to be awful, and they turned out to be actually very well structured and really had a go at them. And it's exactly what the Romanian coach was saying before the game. He was saying, "We're going to have a go at them. We're not just here to make up the numbers. We don't come here very often. Be ready." And they did. Vlad Chiriches, you know, defended fantastically against Olivier Giroud, really made his life difficult.
And Grigori as well. They
were fantastic. But what mattered for France was that they got the win, that Deschamps made two very, very ballsy substitutions by taking off Pogba and Griezmann, and that they had a big moment. France teams that have been successful in the past have a big moment. They have a sort of a key sort of moment which happened before. And that moment was Dimitri Payet scoring that goal. You know, they look good in the game. They look maybe a little bit scrappy in midfield. But Dimitri Payet scoring that goal, that means they've got 3 points. They're in the driving seat for the group now.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll probably be feeling on cloud nine because they'll think, Cole, you know what? We've got a guy who can make magic happen.
Yeah.
So let's just play our natural game. Even if we're 1-0 down, we know we've got this guy. If he gets, all four of his goals for France come from outside the area.
Yeah.
They know that they've got a guy who they can rely upon. And, you know, the French press is feeling really optimistic about France now because that was a tough first hurdle. Now they've got Albania. If they win 6 points, they'll probably win the group. And then it's basically whoever comes second out of England's group who's probably not going to be a great team. So then that's quarterfinals. So already you can see the momentum building for France.
Absolutely.
They just need to play as they can.
In the Squawkers pre-tournament predictions, I actually said Dimitri Payet was going to be my player of the tournament. A lot of people went with Paul Pogba, but you look at him, he's 29. He's in the form of his life. It could all be coming around at the perfect time for Dimitri Payet to actually have a storming tournament, maybe win it for France outright.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there's rumours that tonight Pogba's going to be dropped and Griezmann's going to be dropped, which is, you know, bold to say the least. But it's all with the intention of moving Payet into that holding midfield role. Holding midfield.
That will be radical.
Get him deep, lads.
It's all with the point of putting Kante and Matuidi behind Payet and Payet at number 10. Payet's goal came when he switched to number 10. All right, he was already the best player on the park. But the point is that Deschamps thinking, right, Pogba and Griezmann didn't really work out. Griezmann, he's not an international striker, full stop.
He looks absolutely distraught from the Champions League final still as well.
Yeah, he looks gutted. He's got 7 goals in 27 caps for France. He's not good enough international striker. Olivier Giroud's got 5 goals in 5 games for France in Euro 2016. He's actually got 12 in 28 in all competitions in 2016, despite going through a 15-game drought. So, you know, that's pretty good, actually, when you think about it. So if that lineup for tonight is you know, correct, Deschamps obviously recognised that, right, Payet is the guy who's going to get us through the groups. Pogba's the guy who's going to get us through the knockout stages.
I think a big thing with France is that, for me, Deschamps made an absolute stinking decision. Why are you taking off Paul Pogba? The problem with France was they weren't creating enough chances in open play because their ball recycling was so poor at the base. What he should have done is you should have flipped his triangle, you know, 20 minutes into the half. He should have put Pogba DM, should have had N'Golo Kanté and Matuidi pressing and harrying the Romanian deep midfielders, but he didn't do that. Then he took Pogba off, which was a really bold thing because the problem was they weren't getting the ball to those attackers. And yet, like Nick said, it was a special moment that won the game. and that would have been it. They wouldn't have created any, you know, softer chances. It was that. And if they does go for a midfield of Matuidi and N'Golo Kanté, there's a big problem with getting that ball forward to Dimitri Payet. But if he were to go with Pogba, Payet and N'Golo Kanté, that could be a really tasty midfield. We've seen Kanté do very well in the two-man midfield at Leicester City. Pogba is the playmaker in there, and then Payet can just roam, and I feel that would be a good midfield for France against a weaker opposition. But dropping Pogba and Antoine Griezmann, that quite frankly Antoine Griezmann had a role to get into the penalty area. The issue on the left-hand side was I feel that they needed a Martial, not a Payet. Payet probably could have gone central earlier on. It was just a weird situation. You wanted someone to pick the ball up deep, run at the remaining defence, commit men, and then potentially switch it. And it just wasn't. It just looked a bit structurally wrong for me.
This is the problem, is that, you know, you want to play Payet because he's oh my god, he's so good, and he showed that in the game. But if you play him on the left wing, that means you haven't got anyone available on the counter attack on the left wing, which is a big problem, and you haven't got anyone who can actually beat a man on the outside. You know, which because he's right footed if you play on the left wing. So bringing on Anthony Martial and Kingsley Coman made a lot of sense. And if the rumours are true, that's what they're going to start with tonight. They're going to put Anthony Martial and Kingsley Coman either side of Olivier Giroud because they know Albania are going to sit deep, you know, especially now they haven't got Lloris Cano, who's probably the only pass that they've got.
Lloris Cano was so poor in that game.
He was awful.
He was so bad. He lost it after about 5 minutes. You could see he just couldn't handle anything. Yeah. And that sending off, he lost the ball, then he lost his man, and then he fell over.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was embarrassing to say the least. And the 15 that came in, I'm not sure what the chap's name was, the defensive midfielder, did very well. And if they'd started with him at centre back, they potentially could have done a lot better in that game, because Sana was just an absolute mess. Whether it was nerves, whether it was expectation on himself, he just couldn't handle it.
So what are we saying? France are going to destroy Albania tonight.
I think Deschamps picked, if he, you know, obviously it's great to have Pogba in the side, but the problem with Pogba is that you need a three-man midfield to play with him, and I think France will do that in the last stage of the tournament, and that will work brilliantly against teams like Germany and Italy. But against Albania, Kingsley Coman, Anthony Martial are going to rip those fullbacks to shred, and then you've got Olly Giroud, who's just going to nod the ball in, and it just makes sense. So
one of the things that Albania did very, very well against Switzerland was they played two left backs on the left hand side, and what that means, you know, for counter attacking options, that's very, very good. So what Kingsley Coman doesn't need to do, what Shaqiri did very poorly, was trap back. Shaqiri got getting screamed at by Berami, by Xhaka, for not tracking back. And I feel if Kingsley Coman doesn't track back, it could be a similar issue where Albania could get an overload on Bakary Sagnet, which could be a bit of an issue.
Well, we'll have to see how that goes. But that's been Squawker Talker, mid-Euro special. But that's the first stage of the group stages all done. Everybody's played at least a game. But there's many more great games to come, and many more great Squawker Talker podcasts to come as well. Obviously, Nick, you're going to be hosting a few more over the weeks to come.
Yay, can't wait.
Yeah,
loving it.
It's going to be beautiful. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks once again, Nick. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks, Dave.
Cheers, mate.
We've been the Squawker Talker podcast. See you soon.